I read a story recently about the marathon race in the 1968 Olympics held in Mexico. There was one runner whose name was John Stephen Arshadi, who lagged behind all of the other runners. I mean, he was really far behind. By the time he reached like 30 kilometers, he was just absolutely spent. Muscles aching and just heart beating, he fell. And when he fell, he badly injured one of his knees. All the officials of the race tried to talk him into retiring from it, but he absolutely would not. He got up, his knee bandaged, and literally hobbled the remainder of the distance, equivalent to about 7.5 miles, to the finish line. And when he arrived in the stadium at the finish line, there was hardly anyone left in the whole stadium to see him literally fall across the finish line. It has been called the most heroic act of all of the Olympic trials. And when a reporter interviewed him afterwards and said to him, "Why in the world didn't you stop? You were so badly injured. This could have been harmful to you. Why didn't you stop?" He said, "My country sent me not to start the race, but to finish it." And I know last week we talked about the power of faith. And sometimes in our human skins, if we're honest, we have to admit that it is hard sometimes to finish the race, isn't it? It's hard to find the faith to sustain us. And all of us know that we have those 12 spiritual powers. They work all together, and that's the good news. We have a power that really aligns with faith, the power that keeps faith from faltering. So today we're going to talk about that power, and this is the power of strength. Now, the power of strength helps us to stand firm in the face of adversity. It helps us to remain steady no matter what is happening on the outer plane, to stay the course as our runner did, just to hang in there, and to courageously endure no matter what. The power of strength is located in our lower back, which we associate with physical strength, don't we? And the disciple is Andrew. Andrew was a brother to Peter. And Andrew was actually the second disciple called immediately after his brother Peter by Jesus at the Sea of Galilee. Now, and Andrew, by the way, very importantly, means strong man. That's what it means in the ancient Greek, strong man. So Andrew representing strength, along with his brother Peter representing faith, really are the two brotherly powers, if you will, the two brotherly powers closely aligned that support one another and grow together under the loving direction of the Christ. And faith, as we said last week, is that foundation, it's that rock, it's our innate ability to see the unseen, to look beyond what we see in the physical world to the spiritual realm. But faith has to be established in strength, really, to keep it from faltering. Now, like all of our physical powers, strength works at three levels: physical, mental, and spiritual. When I mentioned a few minutes ago or a few seconds ago that Andrew meant strong man, what picture popped in your head? What did you think of when we said strong man? Was it somebody's going like this? Yeah, it's that physical strength, isn't it? In other words, it might be somebody like this. This is Brian Shaw. Brian stands 6 feet 8 inches tall, weighs 415 pounds, and currently holds the 2015 World's Strongest Man title. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I will have to say that Brian was not available for this picture, so I want to thank Paul Henley Sr. Thank you, Paul. We appreciate it, Paul. Thank you for posing for that shot. Or maybe you thought of a mythological creature like Hercules, hero like Hercules, who always battled and always won over all of his enemies. Or maybe you thought closer to home about the American folktale hero, Paul Bunyan, that giant lumberjack, who was actually a symbol of enormity, strength, and vitality. And here's a tip. If you're ever in a Jeopardy game, and the answer is, who is the strongest man in the Bible? You would say, or I'm sorry, I messed that up. The Jeopardy answer would be the strongest man in the Bible, and you would say, who is? I heard different answers. Samson. Yeah, maybe that's what we said. I couldn't hear from up here. Samson, whose story is told in Judges, chapters 13 to 16, was known for his powerful strength and victories over the Philistines. Now, because Samson was a Nazarite, like John the Baptist, he was not allowed to eat or drink anything from grapes. He was not allowed to come near a dead body, nor was he allowed to cut his hair. And as the story goes, Samson was given supernatural strength by God in order to combat his enemies. He performed heroic deeds, such as destroying a pagan temple, killing a lion, which is shown here, and slaying an entire army with only the jawbone of an ass. Obviously, this is before the foundation of the Animal Protective Association, but anyway. Samson did have two vulnerabilities. One was, without his hair, he was powerless. That was really the symbol of his power. And two, his attraction to untrustworthy women. And it was the latter that was his downfall. He fell in love, as you all know the story, with Delilah, who betrayed him and cut his hair. And afterwards, devoid of strength, Samson is captured by the Philistines, who gouge out his eyes, imprison and humiliate him by forcing him to work at the grinding wheel in Gaza, a job for slaves and women. I won't go there, okay? In the end, Samson calls to the Lord, asking to have his strength renewed one final time. And his request granted, his sight restored, Samson grasps the two middle pillars of the house where he's chained, pulls with all his might, crying, "Let me die with the Philistines." It pulls the house down on all the people who were in it, including himself. The biblical text actually reads, "So those he killed at his death were more than those he killed during his lifetime." And trust me, that's a lot. According to the Bible, he had a lot of war victories. So one of the most obvious things we can learn from this Samson story is that physical strength only goes so far. As the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary states, truth strength can be attained by one who trusts in spirit, who awakens to the understanding of the light of God. And metaphysically, eyes represent light or spiritual perception. Samson has to ask for his sight to be restored, his spiritual perception to come back in order to prevail against the Philistines. And when we really think about it, we know that anyone who depends on physical strength alone is eventually going to be challenged and overcome by somebody stronger. That's a lesson that every bully ultimately learns. Likewise, if we try to navigate the world just through our intellect, through our mental strength, it can result in our pitting ourselves against the mind of another. It becomes a test of wills, sort of a who's smarter contest, a human competition with the same results. When our mental strength aligns with spirit, however, when we are aligned with the power and presence of God, it results in our being not easily swayed by others' opinions. We have courage and confidence to stand up for our convictions. The highest expression of strength is the spiritual realization of the power and presence of God. Now, a good example of combined physical, mental, and spiritual strength is in another Old Testament story that we all know, and that is the familiar story of young David challenging Goliath. That's kind of a sepia print, but I hope you can see it in the back, because it shows a great difference between the size of David and the size of Goliath. And we remember that David is sent by his father to the battlegrounds to bring provisions to his older brothers. He's not even old enough to fight. While he's there, Goliath comes forward from the ranks of the Philistines and issues the same challenge he has issued for 40 days in a row, and it's a demand for one of the Hebrew soldiers to come fight him 1-on-1. Well, remember the symbology of the number 40? It means as long as it takes. And trust me, it took a long time before anyone could come forward to fight him, because when the Israelites looked at him, 9-foot giant, fully armed, they fled in terror. It was only young David who convinces King Saul that he can overcome Goliath, because he is used to protecting his father's sheep. He's a shepherd, and he has killed many lions and bears who tried to take the sheep away. His exact words, according to the Bible, are to Saul, "This uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them," like one of the lions or bears, "since he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who saved me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will save me from the hand of the Philistine." Finally, Saul agrees. I don't think Saul has a lot of other choice, because nobody else will come forward. And he says to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." So, unable to even walk in Saul's armor, David faces the giant with no protection except his hunting sling and 5 smooth stones. When the Philistine giant roars threats at him, David stands firm and responds, "You come to me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. The Lord does not save by sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." And with one small stone, David launched from his slingshot, the giant falls. Well, obviously this story is about more than a young boy single-handedly slaying a giant. It's a vivid portrayal of spiritual strength. Metaphysically, David represents divine love, the source of all of our spiritual strength. And the giant represents those huge, seemingly insurmountable obstacles that we all face on the physical plane. The stone that destroys Goliath represents the seed of spiritual truth that always prevails over outer circumstances, no matter what, and no matter how frightening they may look. So this story is really a message to all of us that we each have that power of spiritual perception, that's faith, in us, and we also have it combined with God-given strength. We understand then that the Goliaths of our lives are simply illusions. Charles Fillmore wrote, "Spiritual strength allows us mastery over the physical and material conditions in our lives." And sometimes we do, on this plane of existence, associate strength with lots of Goliath-type noise and bravado, don't we? But spiritual strength is different. It's an inner strength, a quiet stability, a serene stillness. The Hebrew prophet Isaiah said, "In quietness and confidence shall be your strength." Real strength is that deep inner knowing. It's not rigid or inflexible, but it's able to bend and adapt and flow. There's an old Japanese proverb that says, "The bamboo that bends is stronger than the oak that resists." And that's so true. And in the book, The 12 Powers in You, it actually has 3 authors, but the one author, David Williamson, discusses the fictional character of Superman. Maybe some of you thought of Superman when we talked about that physical strength. Because, you know, Superman could do amazing feats of strength, couldn't he? Remember, he was able to leap tall buildings, what? At a single bound, we remember that. And Williamson reminds us that Christopher Reeves, there's Superman. Christopher Reeves became so associated with the role of Superman that many of him thought of him as being Superman. And then Reeves tragically, remember, fell from his horse and became paralyzed. After the accident, Williamson writes, Mr. Reeves was a power of strength, a different kind from the character he portrayed. He found and discovered a great courage and inner strength. He turned his tragedy around and became an advocate and model for others with spinal cord injuries, which he did until his death. And this is just one example. I love this Isn't that sweet? One example of a young boy in a wheelchair wearing a Superman shirt. And Christopher Reeves was able to look inside to find a power not just in muscles and bones, but in spirit, mind, and heart. So, in a lighter note, maybe there's a lesson for us in this particular comic. Here's the turtle, the tortoise, who says, "First one home wins," and the rabbit thinks he has it sewn up, and he says, "Deal." Next slide. Darn. I love that. So, really, I mean, this is deep. It really is. What can we learn from this turtle? We can learn that there's a time to stick out our necks, and there's a time to go within, to go home, where all the strength and support of spirit is there. And we need to understand that strength is not only perseverance and tenacity and courage, it's all those things, but it's also a matter of balance. And I would like, Tom Bullock, would you come up and be my guinea pig? I need a volunteer for this. Tom's looking worried as he comes to the stage. Okay, Tom, I'd like you to stand with your feet apart, just firm, and turn around so they can see, just firmly planted, okay? And notice he's balanced, he's centered, both feet are firmly on the ground. He's really balanced. And so I'm going to just try to knock him over, okay? No, I really can hardly do that. I can't manage, okay? So I want you to do one other thing. I'd like you to just lift one leg. You can hold it if you can, or just put it off the ground. Okay, I'm going to come on this side. All right, watch. I don't want to show off, but watch this.
Good job.
Thank you, dear. Okay. Now, you might have noticed, and nobody will ever come up here again to be a volunteer, I realize that. But probably a mistake. You notice that while his feet were firmly planted on the ground, I really couldn't budge him. But once, same composition. I mean, we didn't take anything away from him, but when he was not in balance, he was, excuse the pun, a pushover, right? So David Williamson says that balance is actually, some of us feel like that some days, don't we? That balance is actually strength. Strength is balance, and balance is strength. And to be well balanced, we need to be like an airplane with both wings. We need to find that beautiful center. And what are some ways that we might get balanced? Well, Williamson gives us a few. First of all, I'm going to put those together because they're so similar. Thought and feeling, intellect, intuition. If I am all thought and intellect, Williamson says, I might be a cold fish. Well, I like fish, so I'm not going to use that metaphor. I would say that we might be removed. We might be unemotional. We might not make relationships with each other. If, on the other hand, I'm all feeling intuition, I may be up in the clouds, oblivious to what's going on, right? Jesus said we need to be in this world, but not of this world. Okay, here's one I'm working on. The balance between work and play. Or I might say between work and relaxation, between work and, good time with family. I've just read this week that Mother Teresa used to require her volunteers in Calcutta to do two things. Not surprisingly, the first one was to meditate and pray for an hour every day. But the second one was to play games for another hour every day. Now, maybe we're not energized by playing games, maybe you aren't, but I think each one of us needs to figure out what energizes us. Is it taking a walk? Is it sitting down to read a book? Is it spending quality time with friends? What helps us hold that spiritual center? And the next one is that balance between the conscious and the subconscious. In Unity, we understand that life is consciousness, and we need to become observers of our thoughts, making sure that all of our thoughts are aligned with spiritual truths and not from what we see in this world. Charles Fillmore taught that all thinking, both conscious and subconscious, must be brought into harmony of Christ consciousness. And finally, we talked about this actually before Christmas, we need to find that balance between giving and receiving. And that's not just giving physical gifts, it's true there too, but it also means, and as we work to serve and nurture others. And as I look around this sanctuary, I see so many of you who do that every day. You're all about serving and nurturing and just supporting one another, and that's wonderful, but we also need to be open to allowing others to nurture and care for us. Some of us are better givers than we are receivers. I'm sure you can think of other areas in your life that you could benefit from balance. The point is, in order to stay steady and strong, we have to achieve balance. We have to live from our wholeness that Anne read about in the Daily Word today and use all of our powers. And as we think about specific strategies available to activate our powers of faith, well, we know, of course, there's prayer. There is meditation. There's our use of affirmation and denials. There's that power of intention, just waking up in the morning and setting the intention, today I will be peace. Today I will be strength. And I'd like to introduce, or actually that's the wrong word, for many of you, just remind you of another powerful strategy which New Thought leader and writer Emmett Fox calls the Golden Key. And I have to dedicate this section to Doris Wilkes, because Doris has been such an advocate of the Golden Key for a long time. Now, the way the Golden Key works is Fox promises that what we all know, that we all have the ability to draw upon God's omnipotent power always, to exercise dominion and co-create with Spirit. We're here to do that. He writes, "Whoever you are or wherever you may be, the Golden Key to harmony and happiness is in your hands. It is God who works and not you. It's the Christ within who does the work. Your treatment, all of our treatment, is getting ourselves out of the way." I think that is so true. He says, as for the actual method, like all fundamental things, it's really simplicity itself, but it's not always easy. Here it is. You simply have to stop thinking about the problem, about the difficulty, whatever it is, and think about God instead. This is the complete rule, and Fox maintains if we do this, the trouble, whatever it is, will disappear, and we will be able to create the harmonious life that we want on this earth. So using the Golden Key, we're not going to try to picture God, because that's impossible, isn't it? God is spirit. We can't really picture it, God. Instead, we're to mentally rehearse what we know to be true of the divine. Fox gives us some examples. God is wisdom, truth, inconceivable love. God is everywhere present, has infinite power, knows everything. The point is, the rule is to think about God and stop thinking about the problem, whatever it is. Okay, how many of you have ever tried this? I know a lot of people in here know it. Okay, how many have found it to work? And be honest. It is amazing. It really works. And here's why I believe it works. If you can become so absorbed in consideration of the spiritual world that you forget about the difficulty, you will find that you are safely and comfortably in another place. And demonstrations are made. It manifests in the outer. You remember this from last week? Those of you who were here, we navigate two realms at once. And if I can get my mind around the absolute realm, where all is in perfect divine order, then I, by the very nature of our thinking, I have to get my mind out of the physical realm where my problem exists. Now, this spiritual practice, what it really does, I think, is just lift us into that absolute realm where all is well. And Fox says, your object is to drive the thought of the difficulty out of your consciousness, just for a few minutes at least, substituting it for the thought of God. And he says, you know, sometimes we might be so frightened or so worried about an outward appearance that it's very difficult. In that case, he suggests repeating what he calls them statements of absolute truth. In other words, affirmations, like, there is no power but God. Like, I am a child of God, filled and surrounded by perfect peace and strength. God is love. God is here, right here, right now, and God is greater than any outward condition. Might be some affirmations that we could use. Fox says we do not struggle. We do it quietly, but insistently. And each time you find your attention wandering, just switch it back to God. Because Joe Warren taught me you really cannot hold two thoughts especially two contrasting thoughts at the same time. I fought that idea for a long time. I really did. But I'm finally beginning to understand it. If we're completely focused on God, there's no room in our consciousness to completely focus on the problem. So I do think that Emmett Fox's golden key strategy is one that can help us really hold on to our powers of faith and strength. For our giant may not be on a battlefield, it probably won't be. It might surface in a doctor's office in the form of a pink slip or a checkbook balance, in an unexpected middle-of-the-night phone call, or from the lips of a spouse, partner, or loved one. And the golden key strategy actually reminds us of the pivotal nature of our souls. We can turn to the problem, or we can turn with spiritual strength, as our wayshower Jesus did so many times. We can turn away from the appearance and to spirit, knowing that through our oneness with the power and presence of God, we have access, and that power and presence is greater than any earthly challenge. We are strong, and we are steady, and so it is. And let's affirm that power and presence right now. Just what we know to be true of God, the source of our spiritual strength, that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.